call this meeting of the Lincoln County Budget Committee public hearing to order, public meeting. This is Monday, May 4th. We're in Toledo, and this is the first of four public meetings that will be held this month to review the budget and to accept citizen input. The first item on the agenda would be introductions, and we'll start with the lady on my right and go across.
Janice Respeck, Budget Officer.
Terry Thompson, Commissioner.
John Dern, Citizen Committee.
Doug Hunt, Commissioner.
Linda Roy, Citizen Committee.
Bill Hall, Commissioner.
Lauren Goddard, Citizen Committee.
All right, thank you, everyone. Next item would be election of the Budget Committee officers, and I will entertain nominations for the Budget Committee Chair.
Mr. Chair, I would like to nominate Lauren Goddard.
Is there a second?
I'll second it.
All right, I'll take the liberty of closing nominations. All those in favor of Lauren Goddard as Chair for this year, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, Lauren, congratulations. And with that, I'll turn the gavel over to you.
The election of the secretary would be next item on the agenda. Would entertain a motion or a nomination.
Nominate Linda.
I'll second it.
Hearing no others, nominations are closed. All in favor signify by aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, congratulations.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman? Could I make a little point of order? Now we will listen to the special districts, and that the order of events is that the budget officer will read the budget message for each, and then we'll have time to talk about those budgets and discuss them before moving on to the next one. But I want to call to your attention at your places tonight, you have a couple of changed funds already. Those are substitute pages. The Fair Facilities Fund has had a change with a transfer to the general fund added to it. And the road fund, in light of the Secure Rural Schools funding being approved by Congress, we chose to change that fund and add that revenue and some and increase some capital expenditures for that fund. So you can throw out the old, the pages in your budget document and add these. So, and when you're ready, we can go on with the next item on the agenda.
It was all ready, huh? Right.
In advance.
Mm-hmm.
start off the meeting right, more money than we started.
Yeah.
Good news.
Item three on the agenda, Janice, do you have a presentation for us?
Number three is meeting of the Lincoln County Animal Services District Budget Committee to present a budget message and take public comment. Laura Braxing is here to answer questions about the animal shelter, and I'll read the budget message now. This budget portrays the expected financial performance of the Lincoln County. Sorry, I was in the wrong budget. This budget portrays the expected financial performance of the Lincoln County Animal Services District for fiscal year 2015-16, and shows the operations of the district. The district was approved by voters in the general election of November 2012 with a tax rate of 11 cents per thousand of assessed value. This permanent tax rate replaces the 11 cents per thousand of assessed value five-year operating levy that was passed in 2010. In conformance with Oregon Revised Statutes, Chapter 294, this budget is balanced between its revenue and expenditures. The district is budgeted using the modified accrual basis of accounting, recording revenues at the time they become measurable and available to finance expenditures of the current period, and recording expenditures at the time liabilities are incurred. Significant revenues include property taxes, dogs, dog license fees, and other animal shelter fees. Prior to the Animal Services District being formed, this fund was managed in the same way it will be managed as a separate district. No major changes in financial policies are anticipated for this fiscal year. The district is organized into one general operating fund appropriated by the categories of personnel services, materials and services, capital outlay, contingency, and ending balance. The district's general fund contains two program departments, one for the activities related to animal control and the second for the operation of the animal shelter. The 2015-16 budget is $180,515 more than the prior year's budget. The increase is made up primarily of the increase in capital expenditure appropriation for the animal shelter because of a charitable bequest that is enabling the shelter to purchase a mobile rescue trailer for animal care. The fund's contingency is estimated at $116,802 for the 2015-16 fiscal year, a decrease of $60,378 or 34% from the prior year. The district's ending balance is comprised of a reserve for compensated absences of $20,000. The combined contingency and ending balance is 11% of the total fund. Janice Respect, Budget Officer. So if you have questions, you probably need to ask Laura.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Good evening, Laura. You presented to the Board of Commissioners a few months back about the trailer, but I thought maybe it might be of interest to the Budget Committee and people in the audience who didn't get to hear about it, if you could maybe give us a real quick overview of what that trailer will be used for, and any update, like is there a projected delivery date?
Sure.
Thank you.
A local resident, Mr. Upjohn, had included the animal shelter in his bequest, in his will, and we have received approximately half of that, and it will, I think projected donation will be about $250,000. Not earmarked for any particular use. In terms of looking at what the capacity of our shelter, but also in preparing for what could be, we have discovered there's an animal-safe trailer that can be used for multiple purposes. So we can use it for adoption outreach, so we can have better reach out to east, south, and north counties, because I think a lot of times it feels like our services are really concentrated in Newport. So there's a way for us to safely have adoption fairs, go to different prep preparedness emergency fairs. It is, has solar and generator capabilities. It can be a standalone shelter for up to 127 animals. So in the case of, and in conjunction with working with animal services, it's sometimes a struggle to figure out how to appropriately respond to animal hoarding situations or large-scale cruelty events and not have that impact our shelter operations. So this would be a way for us to appropriately and quickly respond to those sorts of situations, be able to at least temporarily house and medicate and assess and then also transport those animals to partnering shelters if appropriate, and can all be done in a way that's not going to impact our existing shelter health and population. In case of emergency, we'd be able to, that is enough space, we'd be able to evacuate our shelter. There's not a great plan, and we have a plan, but this would be a way for us to be able to house those animals. It could be used as a temporary homeless shelter for pets in conjunction with the warming center that's set up for people. We can use it to transport. A lot of the, we don't euthanize for time or for space at the shelter, and a lot of the way that we manage space is by transporting animals to the valley. This would be a way for us to transport multiple animals at one time. So, and in the event of a disaster, I'm not sure that our existing shelter would exist or would survive through an earthquake. Hopefully it would, but if not, this is also a way for us to have a headquarters that continues to have, you know, computer and just the facilities that we would need just to at least get through that initial disaster. So hopefully we wouldn't need it for that those purposes, and that's why we really like this option rather than just getting a trailer full of supplies. I think that's a good thing for us to do, is to stash supplies around the county. But to have this sort of trailer that we can really enhance our services throughout the county. So we just thought this was a great opportunity this to utilize some of these funds. There will be others that are going to still be available. And we have made an initial 10% deposit onto for the trailer. We're working with, they have grant writers, so we're pursuing grant options and hoping that we won't have to pay for the full price out of those funds. It's kind of our backup plan if no other grant sources come through, but we're hoping that through donations and grants we can offset some of the costs through that fund.
How substantial a trailer is that? What size?
It's about 26 feet.
And what accommodations have been made for a tow vehicle?
We have, there is, last I had spoke with the fleet that the maintenance vehicle is going to be coming offline soon. There are, there's one other pickup truck that we can use from within the sheriff's office for those purposes. We do have personal vehicles that can pull that, but that's something we've been talking about, that that might not be the best option. But there are, those are a part of the, that we're hoping that when a vehicle comes offline that we're next in line.
So is there a targeted delivery date at this point, or is that still?
It's still dependent. We have a few grants that are out and pending. And it is budgeted for next year, so we wouldn't make that final purchase until this, you know, the next fiscal year.
So, I'm looking over all your numbers. Everything's pretty much in line with what you have, except for one, and that's in uniforms. It shows
I thought you were going to say contractual services. That's bigger too, but I can explain that. But in uniforms?
Yeah.
For both of ours or within the
well, animal? It still shows that uniforms, and it had been $642, then it went up to $900, now it says this year it jumps to $2,000. That's quite an increase in uniform costs.
Let's see. Okay, so that's under animal services.
Oh, excuse me, that's in animal control.
Animal control side, and that's fine. I can probably address that. In part, there's a new officer, that with a new hire comes, you know, just kind of all new equipment and uniforms for that person. And I think, in believing that, and maybe because Deputy Tyler was considering staying on call, so there'd be four people that would have to have active uniforms. I'm not exactly sure.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And if you go through on the animal shelter side, contractual services is quite a lot larger this year. In part, just trying to, it's always a work in progress of kind of figuring out between contractual services and maintenance and where all those should fit, and I think that's at a good spot. But I did increase it by quite a bit. We are in the process of really hoping to move forward in terms of looking at options for a new shelter. Whether that be renovating where we are, or possibly building at another location. And we're really at this crossroads of having to get an architect involved, get engineers involved, and be able to have some renderings and determine costs in terms of how we would want to move forward, if we want to move forward. But at this point, everybody thinks, oh, that's great, but there needs to be hard numbers, and the only way to get hard numbers is by hiring professionals to get those answers. So that's why that is larger.
Laura, could you just talk generally about the trend as far as permits and fees, as far as the source of revenue? It's not a dramatic decrease, but if you look over the last couple of actual years, the budget for the current year and the proposed budget, it's a downward trend. Some of the factors there, maybe what you're doing to mitigate them?
Yeah, in terms of, with adoption fees, animal fees, is that what you're looking at?
I was just looking at permits and fees, the total budget line on page 248.
Well, I don't know if I have your same.
It's in the summary.
In the summary.
Oh, okay. Just in terms of shelter revenue, is that where that's coming from, Deanna?
Let's see.
I would assume
probably a combination of line
of
business,
a combination
fees
of all
and things
of those,
like that. Yeah.
Adoption fees.
All
and
of the fees.
Yeah. that's something that we struggle with quite a bit in terms of our services to the community and how it impacts our citizens and how it impacts animals in our care. And we can, you know, if say, it's very often that people can't pay the fees that we have set at a certain level. And to mitigate that, we try really hard to at least have people pay half before they get an animal back. And many times they don't come and pay the rest. So we're in this struggle of how much is it worth us sticking to our fees to have an animal not go home. One, for the impact to the community, you know, in terms of our citizens and the animal, but also in the long term, it ends up costing way more money for us to have the animal in our care than for it to go home. So that's part of it. Our licensing fees, we did decrease the fee, and it's been a couple years ago now, I think, for licensing for spayed and neutered animals. It's only $5 a year for people to license their dog. What we're really hoping for is that it's not a barrier. I mean, we want people to license. And we were hoping that with the decrease, it would increase the number of people who licensed. I don't know that that's necessarily happened. And that's a big struggle for us. If I don't know if people don't know that they're supposed to license. I don't know. You know, it seems like any way that we try to encourage people that it's the law, and it's helpful for your animals because they get to go home right away if they have a license on. It's a message that we haven't figured out the solution of how to make that stick.
Thank you.
Oh, and surrender fees. We've been waiving a lot of our surrender fees as well. Because if people want to bring us their animal, and they're like, we can't pay, and then what's the repercussion of that? So we're being really soft on fees.
Any other questions? Let's move on to agenda item 4, meeting of Lincoln County Extension Service District Budget Committee to present the
Chair,
budget.
Do we need to do something? I'm kind of looking around, but just to be sure, can you ask for any citizen comments or anything first for the animal shelter?
Certainly. Are there any questions of the audience? Item four, meeting of the Lincoln County Extension Service Budget District Budget Committee to present the budget message and to take public comment on the Extension Service District Budget for fiscal year 2015-16, presented by District Budget Officer Sam Angema.
Yes, good evening. I'm here actually presenting Katie Jacobson, who is away out of the country, I think, at the moment, maybe enjoying some sunshine somewhere. In most cases, I've presented a summary of the whole thing and reading it through because it's kind of tight. It's the whole thing. Is that okay, James?
Sure.
Yes. So, revenue side, we are expecting the tax base to contribute about $266,000. We have some prior year revenue about $8,000, and forestry sales about $2,000, and we have some interest about $2,000. But we are carrying forward a beginning balance of about $434,000. That adds up. One thing that over the years we have encouraged is our employees to actually look for grants, just like the animal shelter is doing, so that, the money we get from the county kind of leverages what we can get, and we put about $75,000. In terms of who we employ, we have about, the tax base supports about 5 employees, not about 3 FTE, but you know, some of them come once in a while to help out. And the grants and the tax base support all those people to about $250,000 in terms of employees. So the bulk of the revenue we get really goes to materials and services. We are anticipating moving, of course, to the new facility a few weeks from now. And we have put about $50,000 every year to pay back to the county for the use of the space. But also this year, 2015, we have an MOU with the county to actually put up the fair. And we have put about $25,000 as revenue from the county to cover those employees working there and some of the expenses. But also we anticipate raising about $45,000 to $50,000 from the fair. So we have put a budget to be able to spend that money in that effect. Since 2012, we've been putting aside some money also to help pay for the services, sorry, for the space. And we've been paying about $32,000 to $40,000 a year for the space we are currently in. And we didn't want increasing that expense of $10,000 to $12,000 to start impeding some of the services we give. So the unappropriated ending balance of $180,000 helps us $10,000 a year to pay for that extra space, making sure that we don't kind of undermine any services we have been offering to the residents of the county. So $190,000 is what's going forward, hopefully for the next 19 years, but you never know how things happen, but for now that's the plan. So we are looking at a total budget of about $867,000, much same level with the revenue we have proposed. If you look at the numbers from the previous years, it has not changed much, but a few things have increased, like other payroll expenses we have put in place. We have never really done a budget that's not balanced. It's still balanced at that level. So once you look at the budget document, if you have any questions, we can answer them. It's a very simple budget, but we do maintain the highest level of making sure that we spend the money we get in a wise way.
Any questions? Any public comment? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Item five, meeting of the Lincoln County Solid Waste Disposal Service District Budget Committee to present the budget message and to take public comment on the Lincoln County Solid Waste Disposal Service District Budget for fiscal year 2015-16, presented by Budget Officer Janice Resbeck and District Manager Mark Salins.
Okay, budget message. The Lincoln County Solid Waste Disposal Service District, the district, is formed in accordance with Oregon Revised Statutes, Chapter 451, presents its annual budget for fiscal year 2015-16. Its budget is balanced between its revenue and expenditures as prescribed under ORS Chapter 294 Local Budget Law. The district's functions are to coordinate solid waste management planning throughout the county, to implement waste reduction, to foster recycling education and promotion programs, and to coordinate illegal dumping enforcement, prevention, and cleanup. The district budget is comprised of one general operating fund accounted for by the modified accrual basis of accounting, recording revenues at the time it becomes measurable and available to finance expenditures for the period, and recording expenditures at the time the liabilities are incurred. This fund is classified as an enterprise fund, relying on a $4 per ton surcharge on Lincoln County waste disposed at its main revenue source, as its main revenue source. The district's general fund is organized into two departments, one to provide for general district programs, level one services, and the other enables increased forest enforcement activities funded as a cooperative public-private effort through the district, the county sheriff's department, and the Association of Concerned Landowners, level two services. It is appropriated by the expenditure categories of personnel, services, materials and services, capital outlay, contingency, and ending balance. There are no major changes in financial policies anticipated in this fiscal year. Level one services include personnel services and materials and services funded by the tonnage surcharge. Level two services include the contractual agreement between the district, the Lincoln County Sheriff's Department, and the concerned landowners for a full-time deputy assigned to rural forest enforcement duty, responsible for forest patrol and investigation on public and private lands, as well as assistance with supervision of cleanup crews and community education related to illegal dumping. The program continues to be funded by a combination of district resources, dues assessed to members by the Association of Concerned Landowners of Lincoln County, the County General Fund, and a grant from the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. The Association of Concerned Landowners includes timber companies, public agencies responsible for forest management, and small woodland owners. The County General Fund is providing a portion of the Forest Patrol deputies' costs, plus additional Sheriff's Department administrative costs. The 2015-16 budget is $28,443 more than the prior year's budget. The increase stems from an anticipated increase in the fund's beginning balance. Most of this 10% increase will go to the contingency designation in the fund. The district's ending balance is comprised of $7,936 reserved for compensated absences and a contingency of $44,618. The combined contingency and ending balance is 16.8% of the total fund. Janice Resbeck, Budget Officer. Questions for Mark?
Well, I might start out, Mark. Thank you for being here tonight. Talk a little bit about the fact that this special fund, this special district, is really supported without any tax base.
Right. So, can you guys hear me? Is this working?
It's not. But they can hear you.
They can hear me.
Was it ever on?
I don't know.
Technology.
Well, really, the story has been predominantly for operations like mine, the economy. You know, when things crashed in 2007, 2008, over the first couple of years, we actually experienced about an $80,000 reduction in user fees and whatnot that were coming into the district. And so what has happened since then is we pared back to focus on only our primary activities, and those have been force enforcement, our annual household hazardous waste collection event, and our education, and all the other programs that Janice read off having directly to do with solid waste management. And so about the only good news since then is there used to be a real strong tie between the economy recovering and waste generation actually occurring. If you can imagine, people buy more stuff, not all of it can be recycled. We have recovered some in the last couple of years, primarily due to the fact that I think 2 years ago, for the first time, we saw about a 5% increase in user fees, and then we're anticipating about 2.5-3% for this current fiscal year. And that's what we've seen roll into the larger contingency holdover. So the way I would summarize that, Doug, is what that's enabled us to do is, for instance, with that finally having a little extra money coming about in the current fiscal year, with support from our Solid Waste Advisory Committee, we elected to target or to tag $18,000 to update our emergency debris management plan. We would not have been able to come up with the resources for that even a couple of years ago. And that brings me to the current budget, which again, we have not updated our overall integrated solid waste management plan since 2004, so it's been 11 years, and even in 2004, that was more of an overhaul of the previous plan. So the one new thing that you'll see in this year's budget compared to everything else being status quo is a placeholder working with a contractor on developing the integrated solid waste management plan for the next 10 or 15 years. So in summary, it's been a bumpy road. We did used to have a lot of additional call them startup programs, if you will, for, you know, we could do things like provide a little bit of funding for a school to do a special project or whatnot. We can't do that as much as we used to, but you will see that for the last 2 years, we actually do maintain about $5,000 for doing those kinds of programs. So overall, we're in pretty good shape, you know, considering how slow the economy has been to rebound.
I might just follow up. It's really kind of a dichotomy, if you will, in that part of the charge of the Solid Waste District is to improve recycling. And of course, the objective there is with more recycling, the longer it will take for our landfill to be filled up.
Right.
But at the same time, as you improve the recycling, that actually reduces the tonnage to which the $4 surcharge applies. So, while one of the objectives is to improve recycling, at the same time that drives down revenue, potential revenues for the district. So, I think that's important to note.
And that's actually a better way of putting it, and that even though we've recovered slightly, I have no expectation that we would ever return to anything like the user fee levels that we've had in the past due to that impact. Now, one of the things that will be looked at under this, what's the fee look like for the next 10 or 15 years, is actually looking at, say, one option would be to collect a user fee on all tonnage, whether it's recycling or waste. The trouble with that is we're really kind of sort of breaking the mold here, because technically right now that actually is illegal by state law.
And we probably don't want to do anything.
But it is something the state is beginning to look at, because it's happening everywhere. You know, it's like, what do you mean you can't charge for recycling when it's, you know, at some point 90% of what we collect?
Sure.
But that would have to change before we can solve that. And I see Terry over there nodding his head. Good luck with that one right now.
Not going to happen.
Yeah, so.
If you're going to encourage recycling, you're going to have your consequences. And this is one of them.
Yeah, that's the one of them. So. But overall, pretty steady ship, and things are at least stable. So that's better than some areas.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Public comment? We'll move on to agenda item six. meeting of the Lincoln County Transportation Service District Budget Committee to present the budget message and to take public comment on the Transportation Service District Budget for fiscal year 2015 and 16, presented by Budget Officer Janice Respect and District Manager Cindy Bruce. Cindy Bruce, thank you, Mark.
I could say ditto the other budget messages, but by law, I'm supposed to read them. This one's a short one. This budget portrays the expected financial performance of the Lincoln County Transportation Service District for fiscal year 2015-16, and shows the operations of the district. The district formed in May of 1996 as approved by voters in the general election. A tax rate of 0.0974 cents per thousand of assessed value was approved in the November 1996 general election. In conformance with Oregon Revised Statutes, Chapter 294, this budget is balanced between its revenue and expenditures. The district is budgeted using the modified accrual basis of accounting, recording revenues at the time they become measurable and available to finance expenditures of the current period, and recording expenditures at the time liabilities are incurred. Significant revenues include property taxes and federal and state grants. There are no major changes in financial policies anticipated in this fiscal year. The district is organized into one general operating fund, appropriated by the categories of personnel, services, materials and services, capital outlay, contingency, and ending balance. The district's general fund contains two program departments, one for district operations and a second for special grant funding related to senior citizen transportation issues. The 2015-16 budget is $421,663 more than the prior year's budget. The increase stems from a 35% increase in materials and services and a 16% increase in reserves. The fund's contingency is estimated at $371,296 for the 2015-16 year, with the reserve for future years of $647,142 and a compensated absence reserve of $413,098. The district's ending balance is estimated at $1,060,240. This amount is 24% of the total fund. Janice Respect, Budget Officer. So I will entertain questions.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Hi, Cindy.
Hello, Bill.
So anything new significant in terms of route changes, any vehicle purchases, or anything new? Or
yes, we got a lot of new things coming up. This next fiscal year, we will be purchasing 4 new buses. We're right-sizing vehicles that are going to have outlived their lives. So, for our city loops, Newport and Lincoln City loops, we're having to go with a little bit larger vehicles, but we really have to balance it because of the geography and getting into the places that we need to be. So our large intercommunity buses wouldn't work for that, so we'll probably go to about 25 passenger size. And our dial-a-ride buses...
Before you go on, if I could ask, so the new ones for the loops will be 25 passenger probably?
Yes.
But by comparison, what's the current?
20 to 22.
Okay.
And that's about as big as we can go without making some adjustments.
In the route?
Right.
Because of places you got to go in
and out of. T-bumps and driveways and, yeah. So the other two buses we'll be getting, I plan on getting smaller buses, and those are for the Newport and Lincoln City dial-a-rides. We'll also be purchasing gas engines instead of diesel engines. They're a lot quieter. All 4 buses will be gas engines instead of diesel engines. The stop and go of those type of systems, I've been told, gas vehicles work just fine for. The gas vehicles are least expensive, the cost is less, and it also reduces the noise. And when you're going around neighborhoods and through communities, that needs to be taken into consideration. So not only that, but also I'm hoping to get something not quite as wide so that maybe we can get to places that we're unable to get to now. You know, we can only go to residences and places that aren't going to do damage to the vehicle, so it is somewhat limiting. And we're currently working with ODOT and Lane County and a lot of local stakeholders on the one corridor out of Lincoln County that is not addressed as far as bus service, and that is the Yahats to Florence route. This process has just started. It's usually a couple year process, so I don't see that coming to any effect at all for at least a couple years. And even then, I can't say that we will be the ones providing the transportation, because those things will be worked out during the planning process. Actually, we have plenty to keep us busy right now. Another thing that we're looking at this next fiscal year that's going to be kind of exciting is we're going to get our, well, exciting to me, is we're going to be getting our infrastructure in place. We'll have bus stop signs up where our bus stops actually are. So, you know, there's a few places that they're still not up, and people have to call and say, well, I see the bus stops here, but where should I stand? So, you know, we want to add some clarity for those folks wanting to use the system. And we have a couple cities who would like to see some bus shelters put up, one of them Depot Bay.
I know, isn't the city of Toledo also asked about signage and other
yes,
other equipment here in the city of Toledo?
That's correct. And the signage project and this project will be going throughout Lincoln County, you know, among all the routes. So another shelter I can think of that we're thinking of is at the bottom of the college, you know, the long driveway, because there again are large intercommunity buses. They really cannot make it safely up there. So while they can make it safely up there, it's getting around the parking lots that gets kind of dicey. So we have a city loop that actually goes like 7 times a day, and it services the college. What we want to do is have a place for our passengers to sit out of the wind and rain in the wintertime or summertime while they're waiting for the city loop bus to come around to get them up the hill, because that's quite a hill there. Some of our passengers couldn't make it. And we're looking at an upgrade to our safety and security system, our surveillance system on our buses. The update would make them digital instead of analog, and that's just kind of the way things are moving in the industry. And beyond that, we're not looking at any increases in staff or it was noted in the budget message, the increases in some of our materials and service items. Some of the large increases you'll find, one of our main one is fleet services. And as you can imagine, that's pretty integral to our system. As our vehicles get older, the costs are actually done through prior year's costs, and it's on a per mile basis. So the prior year costs reflect the next year's service costs. I don't know if I could be any more confusing, but if anybody has any questions on that, I'll answer to the best of my ability. Anyway, we're not adding any more miles. we're maintaining our services, but the costs are going up because some of our buses are getting older. We'll be getting four of them out of the system in the next 2 years, so eventually, hopefully, we'll get those costs back down. I think those are the highlights of what we have before us here.
I'd like to back us up just a little bit, so to speak, to the replacement buses.
Yes.
Gas engines versus diesel. I'd be interested in a little bit of cost analysis of the maintenance versus replacement cost. I know that diesel is more expensive to purchase and can be quite expensive to maintain in given situations. But how does that shake out against the gas engine, which probably doesn't have as long a service life?
Well, I actually depend a lot on our fleet service manager for his recommendations on buses that we are going to purchase. But the fact is that these buses that I'm talking about moving to gas engines, these vehicles are 5 to 7 year vehicles. The diesel buses are 10-year vehicles, so you're paying more, but they last longer. And the climate we have here, that's not always good with the salt air and such. A lot of the frame, a lot of the body is fiberglass, but there's a lot of metal around the doors and stuff. And after a few years, you can see the, I think it's probably supposed to be stainless steel, but it does start to rust and move down the sides of the buses. So it was recommended that on our shorter stop and go trips, like intercity trips, that it would be more cost effective for us to move to the gas vehicles. But on our longer routes, like the Costa Valley, Newport to Corvallis, or our Newport to Yahats, Newport to Rose Lodge, or Newport to Toledo and Siletz, that we maintain the diesel engines that we're currently purchasing for those.
Okay, I'm happy with that when you say that the diesel lifetime is 10 years as opposed to planned replacement of the gas at 6 or 7 years. So that was just answered my question.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Mr. Chair, if I might, I just might add on to what Cinda said. I had a meeting recently with Mark Melnick, who is the fleet manager for the county, and talked to quite extensively about the rationale for vehicle replacement, all vehicles in the county, not just the transit district's vehicles. And two of the factors that he mentioned that I hadn't really thought about was the salt air and the environment that the vehicles in our county live in, and the impact that has on the useful life of those vehicles compared to vehicles in the valley, again, that aren't exposed to the salt air. So again, when you start talking about replacement cycles, the salt air is a factor here that many counties don't necessarily have to deal with. And the other was, again, the stop-and-go aspects. A vehicle that is, you know, more, what should I say, long-term transportation related doesn't have the same type of wear and tear that stop-and-go does on a diesel vehicle. So when you start looking at the salt air and the corrosion and the impact on the life of the vehicle and the type of driving stop-and-go, both of those are critical factors in curtailing the life of those vehicles and reasons to look at gas vehicles instead of diesel.
Diesel is not a cheap fuel anymore.
No, not anymore. I remember back, I'm going to date myself with this comment, but I remember back in about 1973 when the gas shortage first hit, the hottest vehicle in the world was to buy a diesel-powered Rabbit. And all of a sudden, 30 years later, things are a little different.
The whole world moves on diesel.
Yep.
So.
And then again, Cindy already addressed the question I had about fleet services. So Thank you, that's all I have.
Any other questions, yes, John?
Cinda, I know that in theory you haven't extended the routes, but I see your vehicles out so much more. Is it just my perception, or is it, I'm just aware of it?
How long have you been taking back, Mr. Ray?
Not 40 years.
We, you know, over the years, we have incrementally increased service a lot, a whole lot. But,
Do you think maybe just bigger vehicles? I mean, some of them just...
Well, we have this, you know, we used to have two dial rides in Lincoln City and Newport, and then we changed to one curb-to-curb dial ride and one city loop. And we're able to serve so many more people that way. It's amazing.
And how frequently do the loops run?
You know, we really tried to get them down to an hour a loop, but the demand is, and especially like in Lincoln City, you're going from Cutler City clear up to the DMV. And the DMV is critical because we have health, the federally qualified health clinic. That, you know, so many necessary services that our passengers use. So we try to hit those spots as well as low-income housing, medical access. There's a lot of balancing that goes on to take care of a community, and we still don't even come close to meeting all the need, and I'm sad to say.
But I wonder if seeing the loops around Lincoln City and Newport maybe contributes to that perception that they're running regularly.
They do. They run 6 and 7 days a week, you know, 8 to 10 hours a day. So we are out there. It's just that we've been doing it for a while, and this fiscal year we don't anticipate to grow. We need to kind of grow into what we have, like get up all of our bus shelters and the bus stop signs, just the basic infrastructure in my mind before I look at, you know, increasing service. We need to get what we have in order.
Thank you. Other questions? Public comment? Thank you very much, Cindy. Moving on to agenda item number 7, message from the Board of Commissioners.
All righty. The Board of Commissioners, with the assistance of the County Management Team, presents a balanced budget for fiscal year 2015-16. This year's budget can best be described as a status quo document, at least as far as programs and staff supported by the general fund are concerned. Although Lincoln County's economy continues to show encouraging signs of recovery, many of our sources of revenue remain static. We as a county need to continue to operate as leanly and efficiently as possible, balancing economic unknowns, limited resources, and the need to deliver quality services to the residents of our county. The Great Recession, the decline and elimination of federal payments to timber counties, and other factors led to significant cuts across our organization during the years of 2007 to 2010. Property taxes, state and federal revenues, transient room taxes, fees for services, and interest all dropped off, in many cases, dramatically. We made difficult and sometimes unpopular choices, but we heard a clear mandate from the public that we needed to live within our reduced means, just as businesses, families, and individuals have done during these challenging times. The credit for our ability to maintain the status quo over these past few years is shared by every member of our organization. Our managers have been careful stewards of public funds. The Board of Commissioners has sought to fairly compensate our employees for their service while acknowledging current fiscal realities. The willingness of our two largest unions to accept furlough days during the worst of the cuts helped prevent even more severe reductions in 2009-10. The agreement by every one of our bargaining units during the last round of contract negotiations to move to a high deductible health plan, as proposed by the commissioners, saved the county nearly $1 million in the current fiscal year compared to what we would have paid under the old health plan. Throughout the periods of reduction and status quo, we were guided by the mandate to live within our means, but we also maintained our focus on the county's mission statement, which calls for providing essential public services, both legally required and locally desired, in an efficient, effective, and respectful manner. As we plan for the future, we continue to be guided by the mandate to live within our means, build the financial soundness of our county, and deliver public services to our citizens. Last year's budget added 4.5 FTE, full-time equivalent positions in the general fund, the first additions since the reductions were completed 5 years ago. Two of those positions were in key support areas, facilities and personnel, and the remainder were in public safety, two in the sheriff's office and a half-time position in the district attorney's office. No new positions supported by the general fund are proposed this year due to the uncertain and very weak economic times, continued stagnant nature of most revenue sources, and a high degree of uncertainty over our actual expenses in the coming year. Even the best budget is a well-crafted set of projections, and with the Oregon legislature still considering many budgetary decisions impacting county programs, and with contract negotiations underway with all but one of our bargaining units, it appears that ample caution is justified. Part of that caution involves a continued effort to build our limited operating reserves. Our auditors suggest we should have 3 to 6 months worth of general fund operating dollars in reserve to help cushion future downturns. We dipped as low as a 1 month reserve in the worst of the recession and have now built that back up to slightly more than 2 months worth. This means we need to set aside more dollars for a rainy day as we carefully rebuild. Economists agree that the Oregon economy is finally in recovery, but they disagree on the pace of that recovery. Amidst all the recent economic challenges, there are many encouraging signs for Lincoln County, and we remain convinced that our long-term future is bright. Oregon State University has announced plans to double its footprint at the Hatfield Marine Science Center with a projected student enrollment of 500 by the year 2025. OMSI has just broken ground for Camp Gray in Newport, which will help bring the wonders of science to young people far and near. Opening of the improved Highway 20 between Toledo and Eddyville is in sight, as is completion of the Highway 101 project in Lincoln City. The state has funded a significant expansion of the Port of Toledo's boatyard. These are just a few of many signs that people consider Lincoln County a great place to learn, to work, to play, and to live. We want to close this message with further acknowledgement and thanks for our staff. As we scaled back our workforce, we asked those who remained behind to step up and assume extra duties. We also asked them to share in the sacrifices necessary to keep the county organization on a viable footing in challenging times. They have stepped up admirably. We as a board are grateful. We hope every resident of Lincoln County shares in that gratitude. Respectfully submitted, Lincoln County Board of Commissioners.
Are there any comments from the committee on the message from the commissioners? Any public comment? Let's move forward to the budget message. Item number 8, Janice.
The dry stuff again. This budget document portrays the expected financial performance of Lincoln County for the fiscal year 2015-16. In conformance with Oregon revised statutes, the budget appropriates the operations of the general fund on a program basis. The three appropriation programs are general government operations, public safety, and community services. Each main program has various departments within it that are shown by the categories of personnel services, materials and services, capital outlay, and special payments. The remaining funds of the county are appropriated by category, personnel services, materials and services, and capital outlay. Additionally, all funds include separate appropriations for debt service, transfers, and contingency where applicable. Special reserve balances and unappropriated ending balances are included where needed. All funds are presented as balanced between revenue and expenditures as required by Oregon Revised Statutes, Chapter 294. This document is organized on a fund basis. The first section of the book contains introductory material plus countywide information. The general fund is presented in its own section, grouped by its appropriation categories, with the individual departments for each category grouped together. The general fund is followed by the health and human services funds. There are three funds in this section, representing public health treatment and educational activities, mental health service activities, and the primary care health center's operations. Each fund's program departments are arranged in their county general ledger numerical order. The health and human services funds section is followed by the remaining funds, which comprise the additional activities of the county, including road and bridge maintenance, county fair operations and fairgrounds maintenance, and improvement and various other functions that the county is responsible for. These funds are presented in fund numerical order and arranged by their program and activity departments. The next section of this document contains the budget documents of the several special districts within the county that are component units of the county's financial system. The final section is reference material containing the county's various pay plans and a complete position listing for all county positions. County funds are budgeted and accounted for on the modified accrual basis of accounting. Revenues are recorded at the time they become measurable and available to finance expenditures of the current period, and expenditures are recorded at the time liabilities are incurred, except for interfund transactions, which are recorded on the accrual basis. No major changes in financial policies are anticipated in this fiscal year. Property tax revenue is the single biggest source of revenue for the county. The county's permanent tax rate remains at $2.8202 per $1,000 of assessed valuation. Other major revenues include intergovernmental revenue, grants and payments received from federal, state, and other local governments, a 9% transient room tax, permits and fees charged for specific activities in the county, and charges for services, amounts charged for direct service provided by the county. In 2015-16, the budget totals $83,015,628, a decrease from the current year of $5,268,213. This decrease comes mainly from planned reductions of capital expenditure. The combined contingency and reserve categories are increasing slightly countywide to $18,642,475. In the general fund, personnel services is increasing by $112,357, a 0.5% increase over the current period. Materials and services are increasing by 4.1% or $309,416. Capital outlay is decreasing by $1,327,873 or 52% from the 2014-15 fiscal year. The combined contingency and reserve categories for the general fund for fiscal year 2015-16 are estimated at $4,393,478, a $223,104 or 5% increase from the current year. Janice Respect, Budget Officer.
Any questions? I would ask Janice that you expound a little bit on the planned reduction of capital expenditures and how that came about.
Well, we have a capital projects fund where a couple of years ago, two years ago now, I believe, we had borrowed a sum of money to do some capital projects. Several of them, most notably the Extension Service District building, have been completed, which takes them out of the budget, then there won't be any capital expenditures for that in the upcoming year, because they're finished, and several others. There's some parks, acquisitions and improvement projects that have been completed that generally we're not replacing those with more capital activity. We don't feel like we want to borrow any more money to do capital projects this year, and we don't want to use reserves to do them either. So that's why that number for capital activity is going down in the upcoming budget.
Was not completion of the jail kitchen renovation part of
that? That was also part. That was a roughly $350,000 project that was completed in the current fiscal year. So we're not replacing those completed projects with new projects. So.
I just really wanted that expressed for the record.
Sure.
I think it's also while we're on the subject, excuse me to kind of jump in, but while we're on the subject of capital projects, this budget document does contain a list of capital projects and additional information on for the public or somebody else. It's I think page 306, which just coincidentally is the very last page of the document.
So that's a fairly recent addition, isn't it? We added for this current year.
I think this is maybe the third year that we've added this. What I try to do is get as detailed a list as I can of all the capital projects that are planned through all the funds for the county. So some funds are pretty specific, others are a little more general.
I think it's a really good addition, because this is probably more than anything else the thing that can cause the budget to vary from year to year. I mean, aside from personnel costs, and it's nice to have it broken out. And then also, I think as we have this build up over several years, it'll make it easier to refer back to say, okay, what year did we do the jail kitchen for one example?
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I have first of all a comment. I'm glad to see the veterans are being supported as they should be. It's reassuring. Then we go to page 127, which is the solid waste disposal. And under other supplies, 2 years of nothing, and then last year, $3,500, and almost $40,000.
That's a joke. I wonder if Mark could address that.
Yep.
Generic answer to that. You may find other things like that in the budget, and what that describes is during this period of time where we were trying to operate literally as skinny as possible, there were times that we either budgeted very little or no money at all in certain categories, and just went through the year knowing that that was going to be the way it was. And so you have to balance that with the fact that now that we do have a little more extra, if it's not in the budget, you really can't spend it. And so that's important. That's how some of those items showed up. But the thing I want to highlight is, even though we put those there this year, because it has been 2 or 3 years that we've had, you know, some room to get caught up on whatever, our policy is really still pretty much to only spend those things that we absolutely feel like we have to spend, which is why we've been continuing to build up our overall reserve in terms of, I think we were down to as low as, it doesn't show in this current document, but maybe as low as $4,000 or $5,000 a number of years ago, and now we're back up there at about $45,000 to $50,000. So the fact that it's there is kind of a, yeah, we have enough money that we could do some of these things, but it doesn't necessarily mean that we expect to spend it all.
Okay.
So it's a place keeper.
It's kind of a place keeper because we haven't had one. And there are several in there that are like that that haven't been there for a couple of years. So it just meant we were, you know, using shorter paper pencils and doing everything we possibly do.
Well, I understand that. Yeah. I just thought there might be something tied.
Yeah, no, nothing in particular.
Okay.
So that's not the Liddy Tower?
No.
No.
Oh, that's okay. In the general.
That's oh, that's in the general. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So, okay, so the other supplies goes from 3,400 to 40,000.
Yeah.
And that's
the page you're looking at.
Can I? 40.
Yeah, I don't think this is actually environmental.
It's a solid waste and environmental.
Oh, okay. Oh, I didn't even realize. Okay, yeah.
Oh, okay.
So I think we got you outside of your expertise.
But I see, that's the part of 375.
But thank you for trying to cover it.
Well, I thought I heard a number like $4,000, so you still had me thinking it was me.
Well, no, I know where it is in the. I know the question you've got there. I don't have the answer. We have to talk to the environmental health folks to get that. We can supply that tomorrow night. Unless, Janice, you know it off the top of your head.
I do not know.
No, I don't know why that number is there. I actually don't know.
Oh, right, yeah. Yeah, no wonder. I mean, that was very nice of you to believe me that I was going to spend $40,000.
You've never lied to me before.
What you said made sense. It's just funny when we said, okay, now, this is really what we...
Yeah.
All right, sorry about that. Don't know the answer to that one.
We did jump ahead just a little bit there to item number 9, discussion of the budget document, so let's go ahead with that.
Next question. On page 129, under the public health fund, going from fees, just trying to figure this out. Where's this money going? Where's it coming from? Program retention, down about 5 from the bottom, from nothing up to 43,000. I do not understand what program retention is.
Program retention, as Health and Human Services defines it, is usually their balancer for their departments. They get for every department they have specific revenues, and then they try and balance out those. Of course, they try and balance each department, although they don't necessarily need to have to do that. They need to balance their fund, but their balancer is program retention. Again, it's somewhat like a placeholder for them. Monies are expenditure for monies they expect to receive, but don't necessarily know quite how they're going to spend it yet.
Could I ask a follow-up on that? So
sure.
Just broadly, I guess, you know, maybe it's good for understanding of Health and Human Services. I mean, I know in the past we've said, and Janice, you know, help me if this is still true, that of all the Health and Human Service spending, only roughly 6% of that is general fund, and the rest is state and federal money?
The general fund makes a transfer every year to the Health and Human Services Fund. Usually, in the past few years, it's been exclusively to this public health fund. It is the only general fund money they have. All their other revenue is through charges for services, fees, and state and federal program grant money that they are allocated. So they predict their allocation from which is the main revenue is really the allocations they get from state and federal government programs, and then build their budget around that.
You know, glancing at it without actually doing the math, it looks like the county is putting in about 20%.
Right? Of the of that public.
Community public health, yeah, sounds about right.
Yeah.
Three funds that comprise all company.
There's, yeah, there's three funds that comprise the whole, but the transfer goes, and is estimated to go this year all to public health. And that total fund is $5 million, so $300,000. Of that, $5 million is general fund money.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Could you, Dennis, could you speak a little bit to the Economic Development Fund, 102 fund?
Sure.
And the contingency that's built up there.
Mr. Commissioner Thompson, what's the page number?
188.
188. The Economic Development Fund is state lottery funds that are allocated to the county every year. And these, Wayne can probably give you pretty good details on what comprises the expenditures here. They go for economic development exclusively. This used to be part of the general fund, but a couple years ago, the state required us to make it a separate fund. So we make some transfer, well, some donations, I believe, to the Small Business Development Center and a couple other economic development vehicles in the county, and
I'm fairly familiar with the fund.
Sure, sure.
But I guess my questions are more to Wayne, if you got a session. Over the years 2012, 2013, 2014, the contingency fund was zero. Then it jumps to 172 and now 197. Which is,
well, no, those are actual.
Those are
the actual. You don't spend any
contingency,
so that always becomes part of your beginning balance. That's always, for budgeting purposes, you're always going to show it. We always show a contingency every year. It's just that when you're looking at the actuals, you don't spend that contingency, so it's not showing.
Oh, okay.
So that's not like
rolls in.
Rolls
into the ending balance.
Your beginning balance.
Right? Then when I get over to materials and services and page 189. All we have to go by under this budget book is just a lumping of economic development projects. So that makes me a little uncomfortable, but well, there's not further explanation, so maybe you have to give me a little
sure.
further explanation. I know most of them,
sure.
but I feel comfortable if I...
If I may interject, is there a reason we couldn't break down some of those expenditures?
No,
like
there's
the
no reason. It just never has been.
Yeah, no. And
I think
be nice
and it's probably
future.
Because this is now a separate fund. It
Which
used to be part of the general fund,
sure.
and it was broken
yeah.
down. And so well, with the separate fund, you want to be careful that you have an appropriation authority to spend what you want to do and some flexibility within that appropriation authority. So that's why they're not broken down. But I can give you a rundown of what we do with the money. There's really four major purposes for the Economic Development Fund that we've historically used it for. One is that we fund, provide annual funding to the Small Business Development Center to support the community college and their efforts to help small businesses throughout the county. So that's a straight amount of money we provide there. We also
that
provide
historically been
$30,000. And I want to say $30,000 or $35,000.
Okay.
We provide a like amount to the Economic Development Alliance of Lincoln County. For their economic development activities on behalf of the county. We provide funding, and this actually, we appropriate about $50,000 of that amount for our micro enterprise, our micro loan program that's administered by Cascades West Financial Services. But that's been great. It's a revolving loan fund that we make funds to small businesses. But we don't necessarily have to reseed that, even though we appropriate $50,000 and have that available. for that program.
Every year.
Every year.
That line item is available. So
it's, well, the money, that's part of that $250,000, that includes an amount that's available. But what's great is the fact that the loans are repaid. If they're repaid in an adequate enough fashion, revolving loan fund, you actually recapitalize that loan fund. And it's been pretty good. We actually have not made had to reseed that particular fund for a couple of years, just because they've been very successful in making loans and having the loans being repaid. Then we do our, the county does a program at least once annually, and we've done it as much as twice annually for our own economic development grants that we provide. These are the small grants that we provide to qualifying entities out there to promote economic development across the county. Most of the cities and a lot of special districts have applied for those funds. That's the program that the board is very familiar with that we do, that really has provided some tremendous opportunities across the county to spur economic development. And that's something we provide on an annual basis.
And then, of course, we've also done special allocations.
Projects.
This is where the allocation to the Port of Newport to develop the NOAA application came from. We've made for a couple of years, I think we gave some funding to buy local Lincoln County.
Yes.
Currently, we're in the midst of a multi-year commitment to try and get the Community Land Trust jump-started to produce workforce housing.
Two other major projects that came out of this fund is, one is that this was where the money came from to pay for the economic development update that we did, the study we did recently.
That's another.
And the second thing is we just provided some money out of this to support the activities of OSU in developing the 500-student college. This is where
the housing study.
The housing study is part of the overall effort to bring in that as an economic development factor in Lincoln County too. So that is that, right, that's correct, Commissioner Hall. The fourth category is really those special projects that we do out of this.
Well, the reason for my question, I've worked with all these, but sometimes, I mean, we try to be clear on a project and it's hard for the public to understand all the things we do with this unless we have a little more detailed, I guess, after the fact.
Yeah, we could break that up easily.
Yeah. Or supply, you know, we could supply some of that information in the explanation on the front end. We can revise that and give at least the programs that we do. Again, we like the flexibility of having that as a single appropriation so we can move things around as necessary here. But that's historically what we've done is those four major categories.
Of course.
You're saying, okay. So I agree with the idea of having the flexibility, but the public, when they come to this, I've had this happen to me recently, ask me, well, okay, what is in the economic development? Where did you spend the money? And so I think if it's an adequate explanation in the front, that's fine. We don't
we appropriate by the category anyway, so
exactly.
We could list several
if,
things.
Even if you listed them, we can do it
they
that way.
Could
that's true.
Juggle up or down as long as they don't exceed that bottom line
that's true.
Appropriation.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. Could we break out the things we know we're doing year after year, like Small Business Development Center, operating support for the Alliance, and the Community Economic Development Fund, and then have just kind of a general appropriation? So if something halfway into the fiscal year comes along, like NOAA, we've still got the appropriation authority to spend, but you know, we don't always know
it.
Yeah.
Because I like the idea that Commissioner Thompson's talking about getting more transparency so people can see where this money's going. Because, you know, I ran into somebody who thought the Community and Economic Development Fund was nice, but said, well, why aren't you doing anything else for economic development? And I said, oh, we're doing a lot, and started going bang, bang, bang. And said, oh, but, you know.
It doesn't show here.
Yeah.
We'll do that.
Yeah.
I would support that more.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good suggestion.
Any further comments on that topic? I would like to address a question to page 50, down there at the telephone expense going from $8,000 in the 14-15 budget to $21,000 in 15-16. That seems like a significant increase, and I've noticed several other telephone-related increases in previous pages up to before page 50.
Not certain why that, well, I believe there's a reason for that jump. This year, I just can't remember what.
I think Mr. Belmont would probably have the best mastery of the details.
Is that the, that's not the new system, I guess?
No, that's not the new system, but that may be the new, and actually, can I just suggest, can I find that answer for you?
No.
I'm sort of thinking, I don't want to say it because I'm not absolutely sure, but I think I know what that is. It's a one-time expenditure, potentially. That IT's doing for phone services.
That's what I'm thinking.
But I want to make sure, I'd like to confirm with IT, we'll bring that back to you tomorrow night.
Maybe we could get Mark up and he could try to cover it.
I've got an idea, what?
We'll find an answer to you by tomorrow night.
Okay. Mr. Chair, can I suggest that since Mr. Kenyon's here, that maybe we got some new budget pages on road, that he could talk about the last-minute Hail Mary from Congress and just give us a quick broad overview of how much extra money we're talking about for the road fund and what plan he's proposing in here to spend that.
By all means.
On page 192.
Yep.
And I am...
So do I get an introduction from Janice? Basically, to start with our 15-16 budget, this coming fiscal year's budget, a mirror of 14-15 budget. 14-15 was the first year that we did not receive an SRS payment.
Explain SRS.
That's the Secure Rural Schools. Payment from the federal government in lieu of the timber payments. It's been something that we've been slowly being weaned off of for quite some time. And as a department, we were prepared for that. It was, we knew it was coming, and so we downsized to a crew size and an equipment size that it was manageable with the yearly budget. For 15-16 at the time, personal services were down here. Materials and services were down, and so were revenue. And so it all kind of equaled out. And we had a very vanilla budget prepared, had very little capital. We actually have a bridge replacement project that is going this year. That it's actually a $2.4 million project through the STIP that we are liable for 10.27% of that. And so we had $250,000 in capitals for the bridge replacement project. We had another $250,000 in capitals for an East Devils Lake project this summer. The famous road where the fish from the Crown Street. And that
let's emphasize that's also a temporary solution pending a more permanent.
It is our attempt to get the road dry most of the time. It's a project that is replacing the east bridge with a culvert, which is going to allow us to raise the level of the road in that area by approximately 3 feet. So what is underwater probably now shouldn't be, except for extremely high flows, with the idea that then down the road we'll do more to get us up high and dry.
Does that mean the fish may not come back because they don't have a yellow line to follow?
We got a sign guy. We can put some signs up.
A fish crossing sign.
Arrows. So anyway, we had that $250,000, had $35,000 in the budget for a structure. Basically, we're trying to get all of our equipment undercover. Now that we have to live with them for a much longer period of time, we actually are starting to try to put some money into storage facilities to try to keep them out of that salt air that Cinder was talking about eating buses up. It did the same thing to our equipment. So everything was prepared, and then, you know, Congress passed us a little bit of a Hail Mary. It's going to give us an additional $813,000
actually she get the payment at the end of May. And then next year, which would be a spring payment, we're going to get another additional, it's about $900,000. The payment this year is actually bigger, but we got credit for money that was already given to us. That the federal federal forest had already contributed about $122,000 to our budget. So we got.
That's from actual harvest?
Yes, that's okay. From actual harvest, yeah. So we got an additional $813,000. And so because we are kind of geared for the long haul right now, everything is set. I decided to take the opportunity to put the new money into capitals, primarily road surface and equipment. The longer you let a road go, the more expensive it is to maintain. And so once you get to a certain part of deterioration, it almost doubles the cost of actually putting it back to original condition. So we're budgeting $500,000 in this coming budget for overlays. Last year, the little bit of overlay work that we did ran us about $115,000 a mile. So we're gearing up to do about 4 miles of overlays.
Out of how many miles in the county roads?
Well, we have 140 miles, or 190 miles of paved and 140 miles of rock. But yeah, so that's.
Give some perspective.
Yeah, it's a small percentage of the overall, but basically what we did was we identified the worst of the worst, and we're going to start with those.
Just not to interrupt, but again, my point was to give somebody that may be watching the fact that it's pretty expensive to maintain those roads, and you know, $800,000 sounds like a lot of money, but when you look at the total paved roads in the county, that's just a very small part of the total paved.
Right, it is. But it's something that we wouldn't normally have done. If we had not received the additional payments, we would have went ahead with our Band-Aid projects and, you know, patched the potholes, to taking care of the worst of the sunken grades, that kind of thing. This allows us to go in and actually overlay roughly 4 miles of road that then should be good for the next 20, 25 years. So we are getting some pretty good longevity out of our asphalt. We have a couple pieces of equipment that, after talking to the fleet manager and all of his mechanics, we identified that they really need to go if we had the opportunity to get rid of them and replace them. We have 2 5-yard trucks that are mid-90s vintage. I can't remember the exact age of them, but we're still looking at 20 years old. They've sat in the Newport yard for 20 years, and we have some serious rust issues. And so because that style of truck, it's getting hard to get replacement parts for, and plus with the possibility of some new emissions regulations coming out that these trucks don't fit, we decided it was time to spend roughly $120,000 on replacement of these 2 5-yearers and with snow plows. We also decided that we have an old culvert cleaner that the mechanics really don't care much for. Every time it goes out, they end up working on it about as much time as it actually works, and so we're going to take $50,000 and replace that. But those were all last-minute changes to the budget. This all come together. I think I submitted the budget to Janice end of last week, last Thursday, I think. So it's happened fairly quick, and we still do not know for sure how much money we're actually going to receive. I took the lowest estimate and put that into the budget. So there is a possibility that we could actually receive a little more than what's in the budget. But worst case scenario, we're looking at an additional $813 this year.
Excellent.
If we could revisit the East Devils Lake Road fish crossing momentarily, there is a likelihood that environmental extremists such as Commissioner Thompson and myself could get excited about any impacts that work might have on fish. have there been any considerations given to mitigation or possible mitigation?
Actually, in this project that we're looking at doing this, I know we worked within the Broad Prism. We've already got the approval from ODF and W and Division of State Lands. Those, the project is actually exempt. We are in the process of getting our Corps permit, and that's pretty much being taken care of. So as long as we stay within the road prison, the existing road prison, it falls under road maintenance. And so that, and so yeah, we should be good. We shouldn't have to worry about mitigation at this one.
Good. Well, what prompted that thought was the, or question was the memory of what happened with Oregon, State of Oregon, there at Millport Slough, and trying to remedy some of the problems that had been caused 20 or 30 years ago there.
Right. Yeah, and I understand. And basically, what we are planning to do is the minimum. It's basically what we're allowed to do and still have it listed as a maintenance project. And like Commissioner Hunt said, this is kind of a band-aid on what should be a really big fix. We actually, the bridge on the west end of that stretch is in replacement, and it's actually in the process of applying for a 2018 and 2021 STIP project for it. And the plan is that if that gets accepted, then we will replace that bridge. And that will be a more expensive, a larger structure that's going to be put in there, and there may be some mitigation tied in with that. But right now, we're working within the confines of every environmental department that, you know, we have to deal with, and so we're doing the bare minimum to try to get the road dry. But we run into problems most of the time is during the winter when we have a little bit of trickle across the road and we get freezing conditions. It ices up from basically the water is clear north for about 3/4 of a mile because vehicles carrying water. So this is kind of a safety issue that we really can't let go. It's been long enough. It's taken us years to even get to this point. It's actually taken us years to get a lot of the agencies even to, you know, to work with us because it's such a delicate area, and we're handling this with kid gloves.
Thank you.
If I might, I have a question. Talk a little bit, Roy, if you would, about county road reserves. And the reason I ask the question is you and I have had several conversations about road reserves and the fact that, in the current revenue environment, we're actually using reserves to maintain our roads. And if you continue the trend without additional revenue sources, eventually, 5, 7, 10 years, those reserves would be eaten up, and then the county would be faced with some pretty serious questions or decisions as to which roads to maintain and which. So talk a little bit about the trend of reserves, please.
The trend is that we are using some of our reserves. I think that looking 10 years down the road, I think we have a lot more longevity there than that. We're in the process that we only, spend, what we have to spend as far as capitals go. And like I said, this year, if it wouldn't have been for the payment, it would have been a status quo or less budget. We actually saved some money this year because the winter was so mild. Mm-hmm. We did not have road damage. We did not have the overtime. We saved a lot of money because of the cost of fuel. The cost of fuel is way down. We saved a lot on that. So I'm not exactly sure, looking down the road, how long we actually have on the reserves, but best guess is it's a lot more than just the 10 years. We seem to be finding cheaper ways to do the same thing every year, more because we're forced to be looking outside the box. And I'm hoping that by doing some of this work we're doing now, it will buy us even more time And so, you know, we're gonna get additional payment next year, and I'm gonna do the same thing with it as far as putting it into, I'm hoping mostly overlays, because it sounded like talking to fleet, once we get the equipment placed this year, that we're actually gonna be good for a while. So a lot of it's gonna go into new overlays, which then is gonna reduce the amount of maintenance on those stretches of road, and so then it becomes cheaper to maintain those stretches. And so as we improve things, in the same way with our bridge projects, we're currently gonna replace an old wood structure with a, you know, $2.4 million new bridge, which should be good for the next 100 years. And so, you know, as long as we keep doing, improving this, the system and the structures within the system, it becomes cheaper to operate. And, you know, crew size, whatever, we're not gonna change that. It's gonna stay pretty much status quo as it has been. So I would like to get to a point where we don't have to draw down reserves.
So would I.
So ask a follow-up to that then? I mean, so, you know, it seems like at both in Salem and Washington, they can never come to an agreement on new revenues to finance transportation infrastructure, and especially roads and bridges. There was a lot of optimism in January in the legislature, and for a variety of reasons, that's pretty much evaporated, and the federal gas tax hasn't been raised in how long. Meanwhile, we've got more energy efficient cars, people are gas efficient cars, people are driving hybrids, all electrics, people are driving fewer miles, and eventually still we are going to be facing some kind of a point of reckoning where if the revenues and the expenses don't get better aligned, that someday the two will cross, or maybe we won't see it in our careers here, or that people do need to be thinking about that.
Right, you know, with the more fuel efficient cars and with that actually generating less tax money, you know, they're talking about taxing things in other ways, you know, usage fees and whatnot. And I know that, is it Lane County currently is gonna be voting on something along those lines?
I think it's a vehicle, local county vehicle registration surcharge on the state.
You know, and so it's going to take a while for the climate to change, but as times get harder, and counties such as some of the southern Oregon counties where are really in dire straits, people will, I think they will wise up and realize that it takes money to maintain, you know, the infrastructure, and there will be some additional taxes or fees attached that people will eventually, like, be forced to accept. You know, because he had a nice new car and it's fuel efficient, but if the road's full of potholes, it's not going to hold up. So it's going to take for the system to get to that point where people will start be more willing to pay a little more.
I mean, Commissioner Hunt and I both attended the State Business Summit in Portland in January, and I'd be interested in your thoughts, but I thought it was really surprising the degree to which you heard business leaders stepping forward and saying, if we don't get a better way to finance maintenance and improvements to our transportation system, their fear that eventually it's really going to cripple Oregon economically.
Yeah, I would agree wholeheartedly with that comment. I think the crux of the issue is you ask people if they think roads are important to economic development, and everyone agrees. Then you ask people, are you willing to pay to maintain those roads? And then you start to get different answers.
Right. And like I said, it'll take time, and it'll actually take the system to deteriorate to a point where it really becomes a reality in, with everyone, and it'll change. I mean, I have faith that it'll swing.
And again, I would emphasize that at this meeting there was broad recognition of the value and the need for transportation infrastructure for economic.
Mm-hmm. One of the problems is a political problem.
Yeah.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
The way it's structured, that if you vote for that, you will get beat up so bad in the next campaign that you will wish you didn't vote for it.
Mm-hmm.
And
The problem also lies with the rural-urban split. The boats and systems tends to go to the urban part, and as our roads break down, until it affects the urban part, you'll never get to where there's the political will if we have to generate the funds from our local states. That's the advantage of this fund coming from the federal government. And to see it go away, it's going to impact all of rural areas, some of the urban areas, but not.
It's a two-year renewal with the idea that they were going to work on something to, at the end of the third year, maybe they'll have another little package for us. You can only hope.
We keep hearing, this is the last one, this is the last one.
You know, and because we've heard that over and over and over again, you know, we do not look at our budget with the idea that, you know, we're going to get this last minute payment. Mm-hmm. And so we prepare the budget for the long term, and then when we get the payment, we try to do smart things with it. And I think that.
Okay, I've got another question. If you're done, road department, go ahead. Are you done with the road department?
Well, I would just share the thought. I'd commend you for becoming more efficient, but be careful of becoming too efficient, because I'm reminded of a saying we had in my infantry squad many years ago. We've been asked to do the difficult with so little for so long that we're now going to attempt the impossible with nothing at all. And that may be where we're headed.
Understood. And we're not that efficient.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got into a discussion with a citizen who, on the whole theme of doing more with less, more with less, and I said, this organization has been doing that for years, but eventually you reach the point where you don't have any choice but doing less with less.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So, one last question. Not related to the road department, if you're done.
We're done.
Okay. Wayne, maybe you can answer this. I see no one from the sheriff's department or any public safety officials, so yeah. Can I ask you a question? This,
sure.
This has to do with the DUI fund. Mm-hmm. Page 226. And when I look down here, I see under revenue coming in 2013-2014 there was 10, and now 2015-2016 it jumped up to 18. Is there, now it incorporates more than just DUIs, but that's, it also is related to forfeitures,
right?
But that's a pretty sizable increase. Does that mean we're going to arrest more people? I mean,
targeting certain commissioners.
Well, that's why I brought it up.
No, I
thought you'd get a bang out of that.
That's the only answer to this one. That is actually reflective of we have more money in the beginning balance. There was more money available to us than that's actually known. That's what I'm thinking that is.
Does that mean you're going around arresting more innocent people?
No. We're not doing any more forfeitures than we've ever done.
We haven't spent much.
It's actually been
accumulating.
We've accumulated money and not spent it. So we're budgeting it to spend it.
Because it's not that consistent.
So that's right. I was just wondering, right? That's what I see that number at.
In the interest of fairness, that was not the county enforcement.
It's time to move along.
I could help that.
Actually, I have a couple of general questions, if I might. Now, I guess I'll direct them to Janice. Could you talk a little bit about the reserves, general fund reserves, and some of the challenges that we have? I know I've talked frequently, and then I've heard my fellow commissioners echo the same concern about where our reserves were as far as cash days prior to the recession, and they were over 100 days, and then dropped down to about 30 days right after the recession and the cuts that we made at the county. And we've been able to build them up, cash reserves, up to about 73, 74 days, but for the last couple, 3 years, they've been stagnant at that level. And I think everyone, or consensus is from our auditors and others that probably 90 days is an ideal minimum. So would you talk just a little bit about some of the components of our reserves and some of the challenges that we have in trying to build those to a more comfortable level?
Well, reserves, of course, are the last thing you think about when you're looking at operation, because first you need to, we have in the general fund many mandated activities that counties do that they're mandated by the state to do, not always funded by the state. In fact, most of them are not funded by the state, and certainly not to a 100% level if they are. The cost of personnel has never diminishes unless you just flat out reduce your people. Our challenges now are that our revenues are very stagnant. We are dependent on property taxes with in the last few years values have been dropping. I think property values now maybe have leveled out. That's a question for the tax assessor. But, you know, when you're not, we haven't actually decreased our tax revenue, but it hasn't been increasing by much. So, you know, while we're in this economic recovery mode, and it's been a long one, and I think it's going to continue, we'll have a hard time building any kind of a reserve because of the obligations that the general fund is under, and they can't be avoided. We have reduced expenditures, I think, tremendously, and become very, very efficient. It amazes me how efficient most departments have gotten and are continuing to get through automation and just downsizing and just from consolidating services. But there's no real way to increase revenues, and that's what it's all about. The revenues are what they are. We are not a profit-making enterprise. Most governments are not. Our population is not a particularly wealthy one. There's a lot of poverty in this county. There's a lot of a lot of need. And so it makes it a real balancing act to provide the services that we need to and still provide for a reserve, a rainy day fund. I think that we're doing fairly well by sticking to the status quo, by not slipping. Mm-hmm. And I think that as long as we're really, really careful, as long as everybody keeps thinking about being frugal and about being careful with the dollars that we do have to spend, that eventually we may wade through all of this and start building again. But there's no real magic fix, no new revenue on the horizon, nothing that's really going to turn everything around for government entities. And I feel real fortunate that we're able to maintain our reserves without actually consuming them in a manner more than what we have. So.
Thank you, Ms. Bill.
Could I just follow up maybe on some of Janice's observations, which I think are spot on accurate. I think the only ways to dramatically change our revenue or expenditure picture would be things that are really, I think, you know, frankly, things that I think would not be accepted by large numbers of the public, at least not easily. For instance, I mean, through the years, we've been able to maintain 20 hours of sheriff's patrols. Polk County, I think it was last year, because they are one of the very timber-dependent counties, timber revenue-dependent counties with a much lower tax base than ours, was forced to cut their sheriff's patrols from 20 hours a day to 7 hours a day, or I mean to 10 hours a day. So that would involve, I think, for us, probably going from what, about 14 patrol deputies to 7. Mm-hmm. Certainly that would save a significant amount of money, but I think the trade-off would not be accepted by the public. Again, the operation of the jail is very expensive, holding 161 inmates. Lane County a few years back, I mean, I think they downsized their jail at the worst by something like 70 to 80% of its capacity. But again, I think if we were to do that, you know, people would say, nope, this isn't acceptable. Benton County has done a couple of supplemental operational levies for county services, but, you know, as Janice said, this is not a wealthy county. There's never been any groundswell for that, and as we say in the budget message, I think the message we keep hearing pretty clear with people, from people of all stripes, is live within your means, do the best you can with the resources you've got, and that's the way we've done business for a lot of years now.
I have a question, perhaps Janice or Wayne can jump in on it. Upcoming urban renewal projects or current projects, how are those impacting our tax revenues for the county, and where are we at with that?
Well, I believe the city of Lincoln City a year or so ended an urban renewal district, which fed some tax revenue back into all of the governmental entities. City of Newport is looking
not quite that, but it's close.
But almost, yeah.
It's kind of unique.
Newport is looking at a new district.
Right.
That would be fairly extensive, I think. You know more about that than I do.
So on the Lincoln City thing, it didn't actually end the urban renewal. What they did is decided not to collect all that they could have collect of the excess taxes.
Sunset
that? They'll do that for several years, and they've elected to do it last year and this year, and looks like in the foreseeable future. And that has allowed, freed some of the revenue that had gone to urban renewal to go back to all the taxing districts.
Aren't they only collecting like 20%
of what they could collect? So that's had a positive impact on the county's bottom line. Newport is considering a new north urban renewal district, which they're looking at a couple of different boundary areas and a couple of different dollar amounts that they'd be doing. But that would encompass an area really looking along the 101 corridor from the bridge all the way to the northern city limits, and then actually running up Highway 20 from the confluence with 101 and 20 to the eastern limits of the city, and properties in between there. And that is really, I think, one of the potentially high growth areas. It includes areas that will be subject to redevelopment, includes most of the industrial area outside of South Beach that the city of Newport has, especially along the area out on 73rd and beyond out to the landfill. There's a lot of industrial land out there. It's a potential for development of that property. That would be included in the new urban renewal district, and that will have some impact if that does occur, but that's a future impact. And we do get the taxes from what's developing out there currently, and until urban renewal goes in place, we will continue to benefit from any development that occurs out there. But yes, that's something we're very cognizant of, and are watching very carefully.
And again, when I was there, Janice was talking about some of the constraints on future revenues, and certainly urban renewal is one aspect.
Any other comments on discussion of the budget document? Yes?
I have a question. Will the county have to pay?
Could you identify?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm Diane Vance from the News Times newspaper. The and I live in Newport.
But you could,
yeah, can you go for the table?
Actually, they're not working.
No.
Oh, they're not working. You can be comfortable.
Yes.
Does the PERS decision make the county need to come up with extra money to pay back retirement funds to employees? Was there PERS ever decreased? I'm new to the state. I just know that the Oregon Supreme Court just said something about PERS. And
right. Well, one good thing to know by prologue on PERS is, by law, only the public safety employees have to be part of PERS. So unlike a lot of local governments where all their employees are PERS, the majority of our employees are not on PERS. They've got a 401k savings program instead. Okay. So that lessens the impact. But
certainly. And the impact of that recent decision isn't known yet. The one thing that is pretty certain is that the PERS rates will go up in 2017. They're already set for the upcoming fiscal year, and so July 1st of 2017, we would probably see some increases. Our impact is less because of what Bill said. Our public safety officers are the only ones on PERS in the county, and that's about, I think, 80 people, maybe. So we've always had a little less of a blow to our bottom line from the increases in PERS because of that.
But it wouldn't affect the current ones, isn't it? The retired people that had their retirement decrease?
Yeah, but our rate is based on the overall system and what it takes to fund it. Mm-hmm. So the employer portion of that rate would definitely change based on our usage of the system.
And since you're not as familiar with the county, that's out of about 400 employees, 80?
Yeah, I was going to say about 20%.
Yeah.
20%.
Mm-hmm. Our PERS.
Okay.
So if the state has to go back and give some of our retirees COLA that they were denied, that won't immediately be billed to us, but it gets factored
into our rate in the future. Our percentage of the employees that are in the system is a factor in determining what our rates are. So
it'll impact us, but not right away, and we don't know how much. Is that a fair way to sum it up?
That's a pretty fair way.
Well, I would add to that, again, compared to many, or if not most
other places,
jurisdictions, we would have a relatively small impact.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Any other comments or questions on the budget document itself? Item 10, I will entertain audience input and testimony.
I don't know, I see fellow Toledo resident Mr. Chambers out there, former employee of the county, just come by to say hello.
I just wanted you to be able to lead today saying that there was an audience.
Oh, yeah. Was it last year or the year before? No, we did have audience last year for this hearing, I think, but year before, nobody from the community came.
Well, I didn't want you to be able to say that.
Well, good for you, Mr. Chambers.
Probably get keys to the door when we leave.
I'm walking you in.
Well, it's good
You're
to see you.
Get out.
Good to see you, and thank you for your many years of service to the county.
40
41.
41 years. And in his spare time, as if you have spare time when you're working for the county, Mr. Chambers also served many years on the city council here in Toledo, and how many years as mayor?
I had 14 years altogether, 2 years, or a year and a half, I fulfilled the mayor Brent's time.
Actually sat in this chair right here, if I'm correct.
Oh, fond memories.
Let's get out of here.
Item, agenda item 11, other related business.
Not at this time.
We will continue this meeting to May 5th.
Tomorrow.
2015, 6 p.m., Yaha City Council Chambers.